I'm in good shape with toilet paper. You know, as soon as I take off my underwear each morning, another Reuben sandwich, my friend. I think he's got a xylophone. He's gotten everything he's asked for. We got mesh everywhere. It looks like San Quentin Prison. That's a problem.
It is that time again. The sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, the king of Pasco County, Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman on the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz, of Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeKemper is here. And the man of the hour, the man who cruises around town in a 2020 Ford Escape, and Big Storm beer by his side, unopened, of course, Mr. Ira Kaufman. How are you, Ira?
Gentlemen, I am practicing social distancing from my retirement account. That's what I'm doing.
Buy oil. Oil's at an 18-year low. Buy oil.
Lee, I haven't taken a peek at my 401k since this virus started ravaging Europe, and I don't plan on doing it anytime soon. However, gentlemen, I am planning a sneak attack on a public supermarket early Wednesday morning when the old-timers are allowed the elderly hour from 7 to 8, and I might swoop in, knock a few old ladies on their keister when I go down the paper towel aisle. I'm in good shape with toilet paper. I got a 12-pack. That'll last me about a year and a half and last my wife about 8 days. I don't know what they're doing in there.
Roughage comes to mind.
I could just see Steve starting off the podcast with this stuff. Oh, my goodness.
All right, Ira. Look, that sounds exciting as hell. And, Ira, what's also even more exciting is 0% annual percentage rate for 72 months on new 2020 Fords at Bill Curry Ford. Bad credit, no problem. If you're approved, you qualify for 0%. Again, new 2020 Fords, loads of them. BillCurryFord.com is the website. They are 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. They're open for business. Huge showroom. Social distancing in effect. You can schedule a one-on-one appointment. They will even bring the vehicle out to your home if you want to set up a test drive. They're accommodating in every way they can. Of course, their service department is open if you have a problem. General Manager Sean Sullivan is there for you, Ira's good friend. How's the car doing, Ira?
You didn't mention it was cherry red. I drove it and met Dr. Wank last week, and he was marveling at the gleam, the sun gleaming off the roof. I love everything about the car. Lee, it's early April. I'm not using the bun warmers anymore, DeKemper. That'll be stowed till November, but it's a nice feature to have.
Buy oil, Ira.
Well, we're glad that you love your 2020 Ford Escape. And just a reminder to everyone, no draft party this year at Big Storm Brewery like we had planned. But we're going to make up for it. We're going to figure out how to do that. Of course, Ira, you'll be watching games all season long with fans at Big Storm Brewery, the Odessa location, and yep, at the Clearwater location, the flagship at 49th Street. Great food available for pickup or delivery from both locations. And, of course, Big Storm beer is everywhere, Florida's best craft beer. BigStormBrewery.com to order food, order beer, and you can use their storm tracker to find beer near you at your local shop or at your local store, and check out all the great varieties. We love the Wavemaker, the Tropic Pressure, the Bromosa, all the great standards.
By the way, Steve, Little Cosmo's been asking about that Reuben sandwich. He wants a little piece of the next one, and he's wondering when it's going to come. Put that on the back burner. You got to get to that. Another Reuben sandwich, my friend.
How's the training going? Is Cosmo doing his business outside? You still taking him in the bath with you? What's going on?
He's going on the paper for the most part. He makes his mistake. He gets excited. You know, as soon as I take off my underwear each morning to put on a fresh pair, he ravages each set of underwear. Once they hit the floor, it's fair game. He's ripping holes through my underwear. Lee, that's a problem. I can't go to the store and replenish them. I'm running out. You know, I might have a scarf, and I could walk into Publix with a scarf and no underwear.
All right. Back to business here. All right, Ira. Well, good luck with Cosmo. I thought you had it down, but you know, I guess we'll send you some underwear. Don't worry about it. If you go commando, that's the way it goes.
Steve, we've been taking him in the backyard. He's doing well back there, but he found a hole in the bottom of the fence, and we can't have him going to the neighbor's yard because once he sneaks through that fence, who knows where the heck he's going? So We got it all boarded up. We got mesh everywhere. It looks like San Quentin prison right now. He's causing some problems, but he's a lot of fun overall.
All right, Sage, 2 weeks from the NFL draft, and you wrote a column that I know ruffles some feathers and people don't get it, but it's something that needs to be said, and maybe it's perceived as negativity, or maybe it's just, I don't know, it leaves people uneasy. But your column from earlier this week is about how Bruce Arians has really the most to prove on the Buccaneers, the high-profile Buccaneers, because he's got three losing seasons in a row, and now the organization is all in with Tom Brady and a maxed-out salary cap and second year in the system. And you're sort of saying, hey, if he doesn't get it done, then this guy's not the guy we thought he was. And you're almost implying that, you know, maybe he should go if he can't get it done this year. What do you have to say about that and the whole concept of how that makes fans uneasy?
Guys, it's a strange scenario for a guy that that's been a two-time coach of the year. I mean, normally you'd say his legacy is set. But is it, Lee? I mean, he's got one playoff win. He's coached 6 years, got one playoff win. The last 3 years, they're not all losing. He was 8-8 his last year in Arizona. But, Lee, both of those last 2 years in Arizona, he needed a two-game winning streak at the end of the year, one time to reach 7-8-1 and the other time to reach 8-8, and now 7-9, where he thought this was a quicker turnaround than the Arizona team he inherited in 2013. And, Lee, most importantly, and here's the reason I wrote that column, as Steve laid out, Lee, he's gotten everything he's asked for. If you go 7-9, you're not going to blame it on losing, Breshad Perriman or Nassib. You're just not going to do that. Now, barring a serious injury to Tom Brady, I don't think there's any excuse not to make the playoffs for this team. Lee, there's pressure on Bruce Arians. If he goes 7-9 again, I can see him walking out the door.
Ira, you're actually saying that this might be Bruce Arians' last year? Really?
Well, I'm saying out of his own accord. Of his own accord.
Whoa. Probably.
Probably not because Brady's going to be here for 2 years, so he's probably not going to leave at the end of the season. But, I mean, if it's a bad season, Lee, I'm talking about 6-10 with a healthy Tom Brady, I mean, that's a serious problem at one Buck place.
Well, I'll admit, and I wrote this morning, I've written it 3 or 4 times at least, but I pointed out that there's only been one coach since the Glazer family took over this organization that has had back-to-back losing seasons and survived, and that coach also won them a Super Bowl. Arians doesn't have that on his resume. Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl on his resume as a coordinator, not as a head coach. And fans go nuts when I write that. I'm like, one guy, I wrote back to him on JoeBucksFan.com. I said, are you trying to tell me this is not a fact? Are you trying to tell me I made this up? But I thought, and I wrote this, I thought getting Brady, you know, he's obviously going to be here for 2 years. I thought that buys Arians a year. That even though, let's say he can have a losing season this year, that'd be two in a row, the Glazer family would not make a move because they would want him and Brady to go out at the same time in theory. So I think getting Brady buys Arians another time, another year, I should say. Therefore, I don't think he'll be booted after this year if they have a losing season. But it never crossed my mind that he might throw in the towel.
I never meant to imply that he's in danger of getting fired, because I don't think that happens. It's more about him walking away. But the more you think about it, Steve, I think the presence of Brady, theoretically, for 2 years, I think that changes the dynamic in terms of would another losing season prompt Arians to cash in his chips and say, I'm done, and go off in his golf cart. I think that's unlikely. But if he was doing it with Jameis Winston in 2020 and went 6-10, I think there's a very good chance that Arians would walk away. I don't think he will walk away. I'm just saying for his legacy, Steve, he's had a hell of an offseason. Jason Light's played a factor in that. He's gotten basically everything he wanted, everything he said he wanted. And if things go awry, Steve, again, with a healthy Brady, I think people would be looking at Bruce Arians in a different light, Steve.
Yeah, I understood what you meant, Ira, and I just wanted you to have an opportunity to clarify on the podcast. But I think what this hypothetical scenario comes down to is Tom Brady. If he looks like a 43-year-old quarterback this year and is coming back for year number 44 as a quarterback, and it wasn't that good as 43, I could totally see Arians stepping aside saying, you know what, Brady doesn't have it anymore. He's going to be here, but this is my chance to turn it over to Leftwich. The Glazers will keep it going, give him a chance, turn it over to my guys. It really comes down to Brady. If Brady doesn't look very good, does Arians want to be here for Brady's swan song at 44 when he looks like as the guy who doesn't belong in the same way? I don't think so.
Well, I'll take it one step further to Lee. Lee, if under Steve's scenario, Brady has a poor season in 2020, would Brady's pride prompt Brady to walk out into the sunset at that point and not fulfill the second year of the contract?
I don't know. I never thought of that, but I was thinking if Brady looks awful this year, and like old age has crept in, and the Glazers are looking for a fall guy, is it Light? Because Light's been on board just like Arians, and the Glazers are looking for a fall guy, and like, look it, man, you were one of the guys beating the drum to get Brady, and we spent all this money, we did this, we did that, and look at your record, why should we trust you anymore?
Well, if it gets bad, and I don't think it will, guys. I mean, you know, we're not going to be negative Nellies over here. We don't think a 5-11 is going to happen. But if it happens, I think it'll be a clean sweep, Steve. I think everybody will be gone at 5-11.
And you know, I don't think Arians would stick around. I think Arians would stick around before Light. I really do. Now, I'm not like you, Ira. I'm not saying these guys will get fired or expect this or expect that. But the Glazers won't get rid of anybody, I would think. It would be Light before Arians, only because, you know, Light's record is not good here. And I don't know. Maybe not, but me personally, like I said earlier, I just think the fact that Brady's here, even if he has a bad year, buys Arians another year. I really believe that.
Well, Ira, this is one thing that is not fun to speculate whatsoever, but since you went there a little bit in your column, I just wanted to open up. We all expect Tom Brady to play pretty well this year, but what that actually looks like, we don't know. But just so there's clarity, we've all sat here and said the Bucks look like a 10-win team right now, and we're not going to go crazy. We'll see what happens going forward. So we'll leave it at that, Ira. And one thing I wanted to bring up, Ira, to you, which I thought was very interesting, it comes from Sean King, one of three quarterbacks to ever lead the Buccaneers to the NFC title game. And you know Sean very well, Ira. And he broke his media silence on the Bucks ever since he joined USF as a coach. He's not on their staff anymore. But ever since he joined USF, he stopped talking about the Buccaneers in a meaningful way. And he was always a very entertaining opinion, very informed opinion. King made it very clear recently that he thinks the Buccaneers will be much more aggressive play callers with Tom Brady. Significantly aggressive play callers with Tom Brady because they know that Brady, no matter how aggressive the play call, if he doesn't see it, he's going to check it down for 4 yards and he won't force the ball into double coverage like Jameis would. So he thinks jack up the aggression is going to be the attitude from Arians. And if it's not there, we got the right guy to make that decision within a game. And he's an elite decision maker, and we're going to take advantage of that. What do you guys think of that?
Well, Lee, I don't know how you jack up the aggression after your quarterback just threw for 5,100 yards. I mean, you know, these balls all over the place. They led the league in 20-yard completions. They had 75 of them. I mean, that's 5 a game. That's big time. Number one in the league. Lee, I don't think you can go downfield more than the 2019 Bucks just did. So I'm not exactly sure what Sean King means by ramping up the aggression. You're not going to throw the ball you're not going to attempt more balls per game than Winston just threw. Although, as Steve Riley points out, in past years, Brady's thrown a lot of footballs, no question about it. So I'm not exactly sure what King means, but I do agree with him that if the deep pass isn't there, he will much more likely than Winston check it down, throw to the back coming out of the backfield, or Cameron Great on an 8-yard pass to try to keep the chains moving. But, Lee, I don't really see how you can be much more aggressive than the 2019 Bucks. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And yeah, that's curious Sean would say that. but maybe this is along the lines of Sean's favorite saying. When he worked at local radio, he had a favorite saying. The Bucks have to have a plan. I always laughed at that. They got for the draft, you know, like, what do you think the Bucks going to do with the draft, Sean? Oh, they have to have a plan. Yeah, like the guys come in the day before the draft, like, all right, guys, what do you think we ought to do? Should we start throwing darts? What are they going to do in offense? Well, they got to have a plan. Okay, they come in on Saturday. What do you think we're going to call here, guys? I mean, it's like, so maybe this is empty talk. But by the way, while we're talking about aggression, Tom Bassinger put this on, I guess, the Tampa Bay Times has a Bucks newsletter. I didn't know anything about it. And Tom Bassinger, who likes stats, he wrote a story about play-action passes and things like that. And it drives Tom bananas when Arians talks about all their play-action passes. And it just drives Tom nuts because it's absolutely inaccurate. And he always comes up with the stats on how many play-action passes they had. They're one of the fewest teams in the league to use play-action passes. So it just, I mean, Tom goes bananas whenever he hears Arians say that. Like, well, this is simply not true. But anyway, he talked about passing aggressiveness. And he put up Brady's stats compared to Jameis's about throwing for first downs, throwing past the chains, things of that nature. Honest to goodness, Ira, if I didn't know any better, reading Brady's numbers, if I didn't know any better, I swear I'd be looking at Mike Glennon's when he was with the Bucks. Mike Glennon never threw past the first down markers. Never. He was either allergic to it or scared to death. He'd always throw like 3 yards short. And guess what would happen? The Bucks would be 2 yards short of a first down. It would just drive me out of my mind when Glenn would do that, which is virtually every third down pass. And Brady hardly ever throws past the chains. This is coming from Bassinger, so I was like, whoa. I had no idea Brady was a check down artist that much. I really didn't. So I guess maybe Sean was comparing Brady to the average mean of being aggressive. I don't know.
I'll make a couple of points on that, Steve, in terms of you got to put things in context. One, play action pass. Why would anybody think it'd be effective in Tampa in the last 4 years when you got no running game? Play action pass. Play action pass is based on a credible running game.
You mean it's not credible?
The facts are the facts. I mean, you know, since Cutter gave up the offensive coordinator job in 2016, they can't run the ball. So that's a fact. And number two, as far as Brady throwing short passes, Steve, two things. One, well, let's not go crazy because the Patriots usually have a top 10 offense. A lot of times it's top 5 in scoring. Somehow they average 26, 27 points a game. Two, who's he throwing to? Half the time, it's guys like Chris Hogan. Edelman, you know, with all his attributes, great hands, great route runner. He's no deep threat. Gronkowski's a Hall of Fame tight end, no question. Didn't have him last year. So, Steve, a little context, please. When he had Randy Moss, you know, he threw 50 touchdown passes. You got to provide a little background in what's going on. And that is the offense they had in New England based on the talent. And what's the great thing about a Belichick team? They play to their talent. They structure the, you know, the game plan. Everybody talks about it, but nobody does it better than Belichick on both sides of the ball. Who are we playing? What kind of team do we have? And that's how we're going to come up with our game plan. He didn't have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. You're not going to see 7-yard passes all day long to Mike Evans because, first of all, he doesn't get a lot of yards after the catch. And it wouldn't be taking advantage of what Evans does best.
Ira, do you think if the Bucks were truly serious about a run game and a pass-catching running back, that they'd already have one on the roster right now?
No, I think they got their eyes on somebody in the draft. I think they are gonna get a pass-catching running back. I mean, Arians is as much as said it. They are going to get one within the first 2 days of the draft. I will be shocked. I might give Cosmo up for adoption if they don't do it. How do you like that, gentlemen? They will get a pass-catching running back with a premium pick. Otherwise, don't call me the sage anymore, Isbitz.
Now, Lee wrote something earlier this week on JoeBucksFan.com. There was some chatter out there that the Bucks might actually draft a receiver and pick up an elite receiver in the first round. This is an incredible class for receivers. And, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of for the Bucks to do something like that, especially you know, given the talent that's out there. Do you think that that's absolutely insane, Ira? When you look at it, though, there are a lot of good receivers in this division. Carolina, if you really look at it, they've got three strong receivers right now. After what they did in free agency, it's a little bit underrated, and teams is a passing league now. What do you think about that?
I wouldn't call it crazy, because Lee, you know how you can justify it, and it's not a stretch. You can justify it by saying we took the best player available. That's not a bad philosophy, Lee. Not bad. Would you say the Bucks have burning holes? No, they have holes, just like every team. I think they got a lot fewer burning holes than they had a few years ago. Give Light some credit. Cornerback is not a position of weakness right now. Tight end, wide receiver. You could justify taking the Alabama, one of those Alabama guys. I wouldn't do it necessarily. And in the words of Booger McFarland, who said to me recently, you draft an offensive tackle at number 14. That's what you do. You take an offensive tackle. And this is coming from a defensive lineman. So, you know, a lot of the mock drafts have the Bucks taking an offensive tackle. Lee's throwing it out there with a wide receiver. Lee, are there enough balls to go around? I mean, it's the old Antonio Brown argument, besides Brown being a knucklehead, is I'm not sure there's enough balls to go around, considering they got two pretty good tight ends, in theory. Lee, it's not crazy. You could say you took the best athlete, and the guy could turn out to be a heck of a player, but I'm not sure, Lee, how much the guy will contribute in 2020, and I think that will be the determining factor. How much can you get out of this guy in 2020?
First off, it was Luke Easterling that wrote that, and his argument, for lack of a better term, it kind of made some sense, but where the argument kind of blew up for me was, and I could see that, I could see that happening. I can understand his logic. He said, if you're looking for an impact player, and this, you know, your offense is do or die, the biggest impact player would be a wide receiver. And it's okay. Where his argument falls apart in my eyes is this wide receiver class is so deep. You could probably get a good wide receiver at number in the third round. That could be your number three wide receiver. So that's where the argument kind of falls. And I've argued that with K.J. Hamler at Penn State, I'd love to see the Bucks get him. He's a typical Breshad Perriman type guy. He's just quick as can be. And Arians always loves to have one receiver to do nothing but take the top off the defense. Just make a beeline, like a post. Just make a beeline every time down the field. That's what Perriman was. That's what John Brown was when he had him in Arizona. And I can see Hamler being that kind of guy. He's a perfect match for that. Of course, this guy for Alabama would be, you know, even better at that. But you can get more bang for your buck in the third round, and then you can dress another area, offensive line, running back, in the first round at 14. So I see where Easterling's coming from, and he makes a good argument. But like I said, it falls apart because the draft is so deep at wide receiver. And by the way, Ira, you're asking, are there enough balls to go around? Didn't seem to be a problem last year.
I'll tell you what's a tough explanation to your fan base. We took a wide receiver at 14, and he's going to be our number three wide receiver. I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, are we supposed to think this guy's going to be better than Mike Evans? Are we really supposed to think that?
Well, unless they want to – Arians has already said he wants to run a lot of empty formations, a lot of five wide, and – you asked what kind of production are you going to get out of the guy. Well, I think the Perriman answer is the answer to the question. Last year, Perriman had 645 yards and six touchdowns. You could probably do a little bit better with a first-round pick. So maybe you drop this guy in. He's got 800 yards and eight touchdowns. I mean, how are they going to make up for Perriman this year? Is it going to be more work for the tight ends? Is it going to be that running back that you get? More balance? Is that what you're thinking, Ira?
No, I'm going with the DeKemper theory. It's going to be a guy that you pick in the third round. That becomes your number three wide receiver. Nothing wrong with that. It's a deep class. It's all we've been hearing about for 4 months. Oh, this is one of the greatest wide receiver classes ever. Well, then why do you got to take one at 14 when you already got the best tandem in football? I think it's a luxury they can't afford, Steve. I'd be surprised, not shocked. And I'm not saying the guys, Ruggs or Judy aren't going to be good players. Lamb. First of all, I don't think they're all going to be there at 14. But, you know, I think the safe pick, I think the smart pick is an offensive tackle. I think that's the smart pick.
I'm not lobbying for a wide receiver in round one, but it's interesting to talk about. And you could make the argument, you know, you can look at it many, many different ways. But so what is this? Booger McFarland just calls you out of the blue and says, Ira, we can't get together, so let's chat. Is that how this goes?
Well, he wanted to know if I wanted to play a little golf over there, you know, Steve, because he wants to play with somebody that he's better than. And he's seen my swing over there at in Oldsmar down by the horse track. They got a, that's where I was taking some lessons. And one day, Booger, I turn around and Booger's watching me hit balls and miss balls. He said, you better stick to sports writing, kid. And walked away. So, you know, I tell you what. A lot of Buck players, former ones, have gone into the media. It really is astonishing. From the, you know, the Trent Dilfers on down have gotten into the media. Rondé, Lynch, of course, before he became GM. I mean, it's a long list.
Sapp for a while.
You know, Brooks is doing stuff with me on the identity. Tampa 2, he's glib. And
yes, they're right up there with the NFL Network and ESPN.
right a notch below, a notch
Monday
below,
Night
baby.
Well, he used to be on, but, Brooks used to be on SiriusXM NFL radio for years, so go ahead.
That's right. And but McFarland, I mean, there's a reason why ESPN's giving him a high profile. There's a reason.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's smart. I mean, he was smart as a player. I remember him in the locker room. He wasn't a great player. They thought he'd be a great player. He was a first-round pick. They said, you know, they anticipated he would replace Sapp down the line. He ended up going to Indy. I believe he won a Super Bowl there with that Colts team. Might have been hurt. I think he was hurt during the Buck Super Bowl season. I believe he was.
You forgot a couple other players. First, we were talking about him earlier, Sean King. For a while there, worked for NBC for a short while there.
Steve Young.
ESPN. What's that?
Yep. Steve Young.
Well, yeah, Steve Young, but then there's a couple of wide receivers. Joey Galloway, who's very good.
Very good.
And your friend, Mr. Clayton, the blocking icon.
And don't forget Keyshawn Johnson, gentlemen. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
And now he had a cup of coffee with the Bucks, but I'm throwing Dan Orlovsky into the mix.
Cut it
over
out,
there.
Aaron. Get out of here with that.
Orlovsky argued he'd take Trubisky over Jameis Winston. I'm like, dude, you lost all credibility.
The man's on national television, gentlemen. The man's on national television.
And he could run out of the back of the end zone again, too, for all I care.
There's actually speculation
that Jameis Winston, give me a break.
There's actually speculation that he'll take over for Booger McFarland in that role in the new Monday Night Football booth that's coming out.
By the way, Steve, one more thing that Booger said. It made a lot of sense talking about the draft. I asked him about a quarterback because Lee and I have gone back and forth on this. Does it make any sense for the Bucks to take a quarterback in the 2020 draft? Lee and I both agree it doesn't make much sense to take one in the first round because it's all about this year. It's all about this year. You draft one this year, he's not going to make an impact in 2020. If he does, it's because Brady's out for 8 weeks and your season's over. So McFarland is against the idea of drafting a quarterback in the 2020 draft because all the chips are in for this year. He says next year, which would be going into perhaps Brady's last year as an NFL quarterback, that's when you draft a quarterback and you give him 1 year to groom him under Tom Brady. That's Booger's analysis.
I don't disagree with Booger. But I also don't disagree that the Bucs shouldn't draft the quarterback at 14. If they really think, I'm just going to throw out a name, Jordan Love. And they think Jordan Love could be that guy, and hopefully they're not drafting lower than 14 next year. Hopefully. Right. So this might be the chance to get that guy, the Aaron Rodgers, so to speak, to Favre. Get that guy to sit behind Brady. Like Steve always says, you supposedly have the greatest coaching staff that man has ever created, you know, since Lombardi and Landry were coordinators on the same team. Have this guy learn under these coaches, learn under Brady. I don't know if I would do it, but I'm not opposed to it at all. It's intriguing. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head next year's pretty much going to be a two quarterback draft, and that's it. It's going to be what's his face from Clemson?
And if they're in the mix for Trevor Lawrence, then all hell's breaking loose in Tampa, right, Steve?
Well,
the other
all
guy
I know is
Justin Fields.
If the Patriots actually have success with Jarrett Stidham at quarterback, who was very late in the fourth round last year, and shortly after that, the Bucs drafted a kicker. That's just would be too poetic in the Buccaneers' soap opera.
Well, it would be even more icing on the cake if what you guys said earlier, if Brady looks like an old man and Jameis goes somewhere and comes off the bench and lights it up. Like, that's the Bucs.
For the Bucs to draft the quarterback anywhere before the fourth or fifth round, it would mean one thing. Arians, never buying John Spytek or any scout that's scouting the Midwest. Arians has to be in love with the guy, Steve. Bottom line, that's the only thing that counts. Not Tom Brady, not Spytek, not Jason Light, not the Glazers. Bruce Arians has to love the guy. Then they'll draft him.
You know,
if he doesn't love the guy, that's not going to happen.
Earlier, Lee mentioned Jason Light banging a drum for something. I'm not really sure he's allowed to bring a drum into One Buck Palace. I don't think he has that kind of rank and privilege anymore.
I think he's got a xylophone last time I looked.
All right, Ira. Look, speaking of offensive line, over the weekend I heard an interview with the big Tristan Wirfs, the big lineman out of Iowa who's supposedly NFL ready. Bill Polian raving about how anybody coming out of Iowa, you know that they've been better coached there than they probably will be in the NFL. So that's always interesting. But they were asking Wirfs on the radio, what's going on as far as teams you have lined up for phone calls? Is it just a phone call? Is it Zoom? Is it FaceTime? You have a lot of people on the phone. How's it going? And Wirfs says, I've had one Zoom call that was pretty involved. I got a couple of FaceTimes lined up, and the other ones are just phone calls. And he goes on to say that his call on Zoom with two offensive line coaches and the coordinator was with the Buccaneers. So the Bucs were first to the party in doing their interview with Tristan Wirfs. So people can chew on that.
Lee, the more I think about this tackle situation with the 2020 draft, and it is a position of strength at the top in this draft, more so than other recent drafts. Lee, the more I'm thinking about it, and, you know, I haven't been a big fan of projection where, you know, the Bucs are taking MJ Stewart and they don't know what to do with him. And they're taking this guy and, you know, they don't, and they're moving Marpet all over the place, the center and whatever. I'm not a big fan of that. But, Lee, the more I'm thinking about this tackle position for the 2020 Bucs, you know, you're plugging a guy in at right tackle, theoretically. And I think a big part of this pick, if they take one at 14 especially, They have to be thinking, can this guy transition to left tackle, if necessary, down the line? Lee, that's got a big part of it.
Well, you would love what Polian said. I know I sent you the interview. I don't know if you listened to it, but that was a key element to part of Polian's breakdown on NFL Radio, the offensive line. I don't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. The tackle for Alabama, he's a right tackle. And Polian went into detail. I mean, it was the best 12 to 15 minutes I've ever heard anybody talk about offensive linemen. How GMs look at offensive linemen, how teams look at offensive linemen, what they're looking for, what the general public never factors in.
Like, I think his name is Jedrick Wills.
Wills, okay. Polian was talking about him. He said, the guy's a right tackle. Leave him at right tackle. And he said this nonsense that he was placed at right tackle because Tua was a left-hander. He said, that's nonsense. He goes, he's a right tackle because he's a right tackle. You leave him at right tackle. And Polian admitted he doesn't like bouncing guys to different positions on the offensive line. You find where he plays best, you leave him be. If you don't like him there, you get rid of him. And I thought it was very interesting. But he was adamant. The guy from Alabama is a right tackle, period. And getting back to Wirfs real quick, reason why Polian loves Wirfs, although he thinks he's more of a guard. He's not sure he could be a tackle, but he thinks he could be a guard. But the reason why he loves Wirfs and guys out of Iowa, Kirk Ferentz was Bill Belichick's offensive line coach in Cleveland. And I've heard Polian talk about this before. He said when an offensive lineman comes from Iowa, You hardly have to scout them at all. You just show up to Iowa City. You go to practice. Like, hey, Kirk, I want to make sure. Is he 6'3"? Okay, yeah. Does he still weigh 320? Yeah. Okay, fine. See ya. He says the easiest scouting a guy has to do is an Iowa offensive lineman. He double checked the measurements with Kirk Ferentz, and you see that he's walking on 2 feet, and you go back in your car and you leave.
You know, Steve, they grow them big and they grow them ornery in Iowa. No question about it.
All right, Ira, speaking of ornery, now look, I don't understand this down the line. We expect to worry about down the line with an offensive lineman. Either they're drafting for right now and going all in on winning with Brady, or not. I don't think the down the line really can factor in, because if you're really worried about down the line, you draft a quarterback. If that's really where your focus is, and if you're even going that way, number two, in my opinion, would be the defensive line. I think Sue is old, which he is, and overrated. That's my opinion. I think Vita Vea is a little bit overrated as well. We got other guys with age on that line. I think if they really care about down the line, then they need to draft a defensive tackle, defensive lineman with the first pick. That's just me.
Well, I just think it's an extra attribute, Steve, if you think a guy has the versatility, because, you know, I don't know about the other two of you guys, but I'm not totally sold on the future of Donovan Smith. I mean, I'm just not. And I think Polian would tell you, Lee, that left tackle might be the second most important position in football. At the least, it's the third most important behind a quarterback and a pass rusher. And
Gil Brandt's missing.
And Gil Brandt, and he's got his bust in Canton for a reason. I'm not totally sold on Smith. I don't think he's bad. But he's certainly not elite, and I want elite. So, look, Steve, to your point, you draft the guy at right tackle. That's where he's going to stay. But it gives you nice flexibility down the line if there's a problem. And you've mentioned, Steve, from a financial standpoint, you don't have that commitment to Smith past the 2020 season. Those are all factors. You know, that's what a general manager has to think about.
We hear you, Ira.
I want your feedback on this, Ira. When you react. When Poling was talking about a left tackle, specifically he was talking about Becton, and he said Becton is an absolute road grader as a run blocker. He said it's like a bulldozer. But that's not what you pay left tackles for. You pay left tackles to pass block. Running blocking's nice, but you pay them to pass block.
I agree with that. And that's been a problem with DeMar Dotson, who's been a decent player for the Bucks, longest tenured Buck. Now still looking for a job in free agency. Anybody you ever talked to about Dotson, including people in the building, readily admitted, Lee, and he was playing right tackle, that he was better at pass blocking than run blocking. And that's not the prerequisite for a right tackle, Lee. So Dotson looked more like a left tackle, in theory, than a right tackle. And I'm not blaming him for the lack of a running game, because it's a five-man cohesive unit, and tight ends have to block and receivers have to do their part. I mean, look at the Niners. That was the complete commitment to running the football from everybody except Garoppolo, and they did it, to a tremendous extent. But what I'm saying is you got to be a road grader at right tackle. That Ryan Ramczyk on the Saints, the guy's a run monster. And that's what you need. And if the guy out of Iowa is a run grader or Becton, and he's there, you take him and you put him at right tackle, and all of a sudden you will see a much better running game. Lee, as long, and I'll say it before you do, Lee, as long as you draft another back, you got to draft another back.
And just so people listening to you don't, I know a lot of people are going to say, having heard what you just said, Ira, well, wait a minute. You know, there's this infatuation out there people have of Donovan Smith playing right tackle. And like, well, wait a minute. If Dotson can pass block, why don't they put him at left tackle? Just to remind people, they tried Dotson at left tackle. And when they told Anthony Collins to go home, don't come back in December of 2014 or 15, I can't remember, 14. And he was Dotson, and I love Dotson, you know that, but he was awful at left tackle. And that's the reason why they drafted Donovan Smith. Gave DeMar Dotson a test drive at left tackle, and he didn't pass the test at all.
I can't argue with you on that.
All right, Sage, we need some quick answers for you here so we can move quickly. While you were talking there, I went out on Twitter and asked for some questions for the Sage, and a lot came in. So, Ira, I'm going to ask you to go rapid fire with your answers here on all these topics. And while you prepare to do that, while you grab a Big Storm beer, I'm going to remind everybody that the 0% financing offers at Bill Curry Ford are extraordinary right now. BillCurryFord.com is where you can start shopping and see them all. General Manager Sean Sullivan will help you personally. That's not a joke. You can email him. You can call him. He will take care of you, direct you where you need to go, or just even answer your questions as you prepare for your next vehicle. BillCurryFord.com. All right, Sage.
Did you hear about Sean Sullivan? Just to give you guys an example, Sean called me up last Friday or Saturday, one of the two, and he was telling me there's a big fan of ours. This shows you, Ira, this shows you the reach. People want to listen to your Sage voice. Sean Sullivan got a call from a guy in Panama City listening to the podcast, and he called Bill Curry Ford up and specifically asked for Sean Sullivan. Said, I'm interested in buying an F-150. I want to talk to Sean Sullivan. I heard on the podcast Joe Buck's fan say, talk to Sean Sullivan. I'd like to speak with him. Hey, patch him through to Sean. Sean, talk to him. That shows you the reach, and Sean will take your phone call. If you're thinking about buying a truck or a car, what have you, SUV, whatever, Sean will take your call, and he will talk to you. So that's no joke.
Mention this podcast, and you will get one heck of a deal from the man.
All right, Sage. Now, again, quick reaction. Your reaction when I tell you that Joe Haig, the new offensive lineman in free agency from the Colts that was just picked up, he was a fifth-round pick in the 2016 NFL draft. Ira, what would you say if I told you that he was taken seven slots after Caleb Benenock, and he was also taken just a few spots after a guy who is the starting left guard for the Detroit Lions, and he's on his second contract? What would that tell you?
Well, let's hope he pans out better than Mr. Caleb Benenock, who, let us remind our listeners, Steve, and I still can't get over this, he started all 16 games, I believe it was 2 years ago, Steve, was I correct? Or 3 years ago?
2 years ago.
All 16 games at right guard. Everybody saw him. Everybody knew he wasn't getting the job done. They had all these guys behind him, and they trusted nobody that could do a better job than Caleb Benenock. Welcome to Tampa, Joe Haig, and don't mention Caleb Benenock as your role model. Just don't.
All right, Ira. DeMar Dotson, Earl Watford are on the street in a league that is supposedly aching for offensive line talent, and Watford made four starts last year, so there's lots of fresh film on him. He's only 29 years old. What does that say about their talent level?
Well, this goes back to the Lee DeKemper theory, and it's a scary thought, but it's got some validity to it. To a large degree, not totally, but to a degree that's a little scary. Guys leave the Bucks who play regularly, and they can't find a job. Next thing you know, they're out of football. Besides Watford and Dotson, there is a guy that was under center last year that also can't seem to find a job. Lee, it's a little scary. It's a little scary.
Now, there's some people out there that are touting the great draft class the Bucks had last year. Well, that's one way of looking at it. Everybody but the lowest guy drafted, the dude, the Beckner, the guy from Missouri, the defensive tackle, made the team. You could say that was a great draft class, or you could argue the roster stunk so bad that these guys were easy for them to get a spot.
I'm with you on that, Lee. I am not going to judge any draft class by the fact that six out of seven of the guys made the football team. First of all, they were joining a 5-11 football team, Lee. Let's get that up front.
With a horrible defense.
Yes. Now, look, you know, I'm a Jamel Dean guy. You know, Bunting made some plays. They did. Devin White, I'm a little higher on, Lee, than you are. I think he's going to be a fine player. I would be surprised if he ends his career without ever making a Pro Bowl. I didn't say he's a perennial Pro Bowl. But if he plays 10 years, I think the guy will make a Pro Bowl appearance. He's got a lot of room to grow. He's not there yet, but he's got a lot of tools to work with. So, Lee, I'm with you. I would not call the 2019 draft class a smashing success. We'll know more after this season. So far, so good.
All right, Sage, let me get to these fan questions. First, I want to mention that several of them were already answered in the podcast. So I just want to give a tip of the cap. Brian Simpson, we answered your question on Twitter. Thank you. We answered it in the podcast. Dallas, we also answered your question, and we'll get to some of the others here as well. This one comes from Anthony Peroni, our friend and boss over at Pin Chasers. They're shut down right now, unfortunately, as are all bowling alleys across the state, but Pin Chasers will be back and better than ever. And that with their three locations in the Bay Area, pinchasers.net is the website. Anthony writes, Ira, and a short answer, Ira, because, you know, we're just looking for the meat of your answer. Are you ready to watch potentially the first season ever in front of no fans? What's your reaction to that? Empty stadiums.
I think it's awful. I think it would be awful. It would be dry as dust from a telecast standpoint and from a player standpoint. You know, I think it would have a big effect on the players. Because home fans motivate people, the energy in the building. I just think they'll do it if they have to, but I think it would take a tremendous amount away from the game.
Ira, next, John Venzel writes, hey guys, my question for you is the following. Do you see us moving any draft capital like we did for Jason Pierre-Paul?
I absolutely do. And it goes under the umbrella of the two-word theme that sums up the 2020 season. All in. All in. And when you're all in, you think about giving up a third-round pick to move up 15 spots or 20 spots. So instead of the middle of the second round, you're drafting number 27 instead of number 47, and there's a guy you like, there's a running back there that you don't think is going to be there in the middle of the second round, and if it costs you a third round pick, you think about it, where in other years Jason Light would say no thank you.
And Ira, this one comes from Giella. It was my favorite. Excuse me, was Vernon Hargraves ever actually good at football?
Yeah, in Gainesville he was pretty good. Could not make the transition. His NFL future is very cloudy right now. Didn't particularly play well for Houston. He made one play as a Buck. It was a big one. It came in Charlotte, week two, against a great player in McCaffrey. That is the extent of Vernon Hargraves' highlights with the Bucks.
Didn't he re-sign with Houston at a really cheap rate?
I believe he did. I believe he just re-signed with Houston, yes. He doesn't show off the ball skills. You know, that's one of the first things that they used to talk about him in the scouting report when he was a prospect, but We haven't seen it. The ball skills, we just have not seen it.
All right, Lee, Ira, probably a last major question here for the podcast, and I want to get both of your takes on this. Well, of course, Clyde Christensen was on the last podcast here. We had an interview. We talked about it a bit. He also did the Pat McAfee show right after our last taping, and this was one of the things that he said. He made it clear that the foundation will be Bruce Arians' offense. Nothing new there. He said it'll be a mesh of the things, but the foundation, how you call formations, how you do things, will stay Bruce Arians' offense with Tom Brady. Quote, that was part of the negotiation with Brady. Hey, that was one of the things that was non-negotiable as far as the quarterbacks we were looking at in free agency. We weren't going to change the offense. We've been here 1 year. We got this thing put in. Guys have learned it. And he said that Brady was all good with that. He said, just tell me what you need me to do. I thought that was very interesting, guys. That was part of the negotiation, is what Clyde Christensen said. Your reaction to that?
All right, I'll start, Lee, and I'll say that I'm glad to hear that because I'm glad that Brady isn't coming in here with the idea of I'm going to be the architect of this offense. He has enough trust in Arians. And I quoted Arians the other day in my column. On the day that he was introduced as Buck coach, and he had a quote about, you know, what's our system? And he says, the system's your players. So he claims that he will be flexible, and that's part of being an outstanding coach, and he'll play up to Brady's strengths. Having said that, Lee, I think it's a sign that Brady's not going to come in here and have complete control over this operation, as has been suggested in some quarters. We've already seen this perhaps with the Antonio Brown affair that went nowhere and was put to and was pissed on early and emphatically by Arians, and good for Bruce for doing that. So I think it augurs well for the Bucs season that it's going to be Bruce Arians' offense. Look, Lee, they're paying for Bruce Arians. If he's not calling the plays, can he at least be the architect of the offense? That's not asking too much.
Well, this opens up a whole can of worms. First off, it sounds like someone's talking out of both sides of their mouth. It's going to be rigid. He's got to run my offense, and all will be flexible. I don't know what to believe. That's number one. Number two, where's Brian Leftwich in all this? Is he just a figurehead? I mean, I don't know. To me, what Clyde Christensen said doesn't sound good, because a good coach is a flexible coach. And if you're not flexible, then you're going to set yourself up for bad things to happen. And that tells me, if he really isn't that flexible, then what Pat Kerwin said, that the Bucs need to get a fullback so they could run more 21 personnel to help Brady out, isn't going to happen.
Lee, I think the saving grace, Stevie, I think the saving grace in this situation, so Buck fans don't go crazy about this, is this. You know, it's not like the general manager brought in a quarterback and Arians had very little to do with it. Then you got to wonder, well, wait a minute, there could be a clash. Let's remember, guys, this is the guy that Arians picked. And Bruce Arians has certainly been around football long enough to know the things that Tom Brady does well and some of the things that he struggles with. And that second list isn't very long. And Steve, if that's the guy behind door number two that Arians wanted, doesn't that in effect tell you that he's going to work with Brady and try to make him the best he can be?
I hear you, Ira. Just wanted to get your guys' take on that. It'll be some sort of blend. I just thought it was very interesting to hear that was part of the negotiation, as if we're supposed to believe, like Lee said, two sides of the mouth here a little bit, that if Tom Brady said, I'm coming, but I need to run this, we need to change some terminology, and we need to do these four or five things. Would the Bucs have really said no? I don't know. I don't know if I can believe that. But it sounds it's interesting. It's interesting. And Christensen's a very straightforward guy. All right, Ira, I'm going to leave you with this question as we head out. Very important question in my mind, and because I still can't believe it. I actually waited a couple of weeks to ask you this, hoping that I would get an answer before that, but I didn't. But I want to remind everyone to listen to the podcast. They are available on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play. You can subscribe, get a free alert. There are other platforms as well. And you can always leave a review where you find a place to leave one. We like to read those. Those can be fun. And we appreciate the great support and the constant growth of the podcast. Ira, when Tom Brady was signed, Buccaneers, the team released a news release, of course. It appeared on Buccaneers.com. It went out to the media. The Glazers weren't quoted. No quote from the Glazers. That was weeks ago. We're told, and we know that they're big Bucs fans. Where the hell are they, Ira? Who the hell signs Tom Brady as an owner and doesn't say a word, not even a sentence? I can't believe that these guys are so hidden on the biggest signing, arguably, since John Gruden. I'm blown away. I hope they're okay. Maybe somebody's got the corona or something, but I can't believe that these guys are just not willing to say anything like this.
Well, Steve, it's in keeping with their profile. They're not out front owners. Certainly, we don't need Jerry Jones here, but, we don't even have Arthur Blank in terms of accountability and public statements. It's the way they operate. I think it was done deliberately. Let Arians and Light take center stage. But I can tell you this. They are ecstatic. They are as ecstatic as any Buck fan. This team's relevant. This team's going to be in prime time all the time. And Lee, from a Glazer standpoint, it's been a home run. And I think we have to end this podcast, because as I look out, Cosmo's peeing on my carpet. See you, gentlemen.